strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. Do you know a Remarkable Valley teacher deserving of a $2,500 check? You can nominate a teacher by just texting the word teacher to 411-923. You can nominate that teacher there. Some teacher is going to win a $2,500, I should say earn a $2,500 check. It is our pay tribute to a teacher program presented by your Valley Toyota dealers. That's teacher to 411-923. And a big thank you to your Valley Toyota dealers for sponsoring this great program. So let's talk about the vaccine. Let's talk a little detail of what's going on. States are beginning to open up more and more. We're hearing from some of the states across the country that are saying no masks in the fall for schools, and things are going well. Here in Arizona, numbers remain very, very low. We saw an uptick in the number of cases today. It was the first double-digit recording of deaths in a long time. But the percentages of infection rate are still low, and we're seeing what's most encouraging is the highest risk people. We are seeing a big drop in the number of cases being recorded, hospitalizations, and of course deaths, which is always good news. It is strange to see the number of cases are still pretty high in the from anywhere between the newborns up to 44 years old. That is the biggest high. That's the highest rate of infection by far. What's interesting is we're seeing new cases. The lowest rates we're seeing are among people 65 plus, which is good news. But they are still ranking highest in hospitalizations and deaths because they are at the highest risk. So Pfizer is going to seek full FDA approval for the vaccine. We are seeing more and more vaccine being made available to people. It is being distributed now to doctors' offices. Pharmacies are going to have them. Soon we're going to have, you'll be able to walk in and get vaccinated. But what will be the incentive for people to get vaccinated? There is still so much confusion about it. And people, we keep hearing the president, and I think the message from the president is a good message. Get vaccinated. Do your part. Do this thing. Let's beat this virus. Let's celebrate our independence from the virus by the 4th of July, which, you know, again, is a little corny, but that's what the goal is. But you aren't giving people the incentive to get vaccinated. I've talked about this quite a bit recently. I got the vaccine for a number of professional and personal reasons. I completely respect the people that say, I'll never get this vaccine or any vaccine. They're anti-vaxxers. I respect your opinion. I don't think you're damaging the country, putting us in danger. I don't think any of that's true. You may be putting yourself in danger. You know, we know that this virus is more contagious than the flu virus. We know that all of that's true. And so that's one of the reasons why I decided I was going to get the vaccine. I like to lead a public life, and not just going out. I mean, when I go and speak in public or I meet people in public for my job, I want to be able to do those things. I want to be able to go out in public and have people know that I'm doing my part, whether you're for the vaccine or not, I'm vaccinated. So I did it for that reason, and for a closer reason, the people in this building that I work with. I work with a lot of very, very good people. I don't know who they could take it home to if I were to, you know, give it to them. So I decided I was going to get the vaccine. I think it's the right thing to do. But I'm not climbing up someone's back because they do it, they don't get it. If the president of the United States, if the governor of the state of Arizona, and I think they get it more than the federal government is right now, if they want people to go out, especially younger people, to get the vaccine, I argued that younger people were going to be less likely to get the vaccine because of lack of convenience. And part of the other issue was they're not getting very sick. That when a young person gets it, the survival rate is huge. Even the hospitalization rate is very, very, very small. But that wasn't the argument I heard from people that are in that 20 to 44 year old age group. The people I talk to say it is the pathway to normalcy. That they're going to be able to take the masks off and go do the things they want to do. If you're a college student, a big part of the college experience is the college experience. We've taken that away for the better part of a year and a half. Look what we're doing to kids in schools, elementary through K through 12. Look what we're doing. And they are the least likely to get sick or die from this virus. And they're the ones we've shut down. So the 20 to 44 year old age group continues to be the age group that is getting the virus most and spreading the virus most. And the incentive to get them vaccinated would be, once you're fully vaccinated, take off that stupid mask. That would be the incentive. That would get them to say, listen, I've waited the 2 weeks. The problem is, as everyone knows, you don't know. You don't know if they're telling the truth or not. You can't force, I guess they think they can, force someone to carry around your vaccine card, get it laminated, and be ready to show it when you go somewhere. But the idea that we're going to get back to a sense of normalcy, we were on, if you look at who was most likely to get the vaccine, how quickly the appointments filled up, it was older people. First responders did respond pretty well. So did the medical field. Those frontline workers, teachers, there was a big number of those, pretty high percentage of those that got the vaccine. The same with people 55 plus. They understood that they were the most at risk. And when appointments came out, they were taken up very quickly. We are seeing now a lot more appointments available than we've ever seen before. And we're still seeing the highest rate of spread in younger people. So how do you get those younger people to get vaccinated? Well, telling them get vaccinated and then continue to wear the mask, continue to distance is not the way you're going to incentivize a young person who wants to get their life back. They're getting their life back. You realize that the reason why they're getting the virus is because they're living their lives. They're complying to a certain degree when they're out in public, but they're meeting in private. They're having parties. They're having barbecues. They are getting together with people. And there's no enforcement of any mask mandate. And, you know, if the vaccine does what it says, what they say it does, if it has a 90% efficacy after your second dose, I've had both doses. It's been over 3 weeks that I've had both doses of the Pfizer vaccine. I should be at the lowest risk of anybody out there of getting or spreading this vaccine, according to the data. Why am I still wearing a mask everywhere I go? Why am I still distancing from everybody else? Everybody else should be distancing from me if they're not vaccinated yet. And when you say to young people, once you're fully vaccinated, because I think there are a lot of very, very responsible young people that are saying, I want to do the responsible thing. So I will wear the mask until the full vaccination kicks in. And then I'm done with it. And once you're done with it, then you don't have to wear the mask anymore. And instead, we're holding everybody hostage with the masks until everybody gets vaccinated. And then we're telling people to go get vaccinated. And I don't think they're going to. Some will, but for the most part, it's convenience and it's what's the carrot? What's the reason? Why would I go get vaccinated if my life's not going to change? And I think we're seeing a lot of that right now. I think we're seeing a huge amount of that. What we're going to do coming up in just a moment, who authorized the search for bamboo in the ballots? A little recap of my conversation with Ken Bennett, and he's the one that's auditing the ballots. More of what he had to say next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks so much. It's the Mike Broomhead Show. We're here until noon and appreciate you spending some time with us on this Friday morning. Always a good time. We appreciate you being here. Ken Bennett, who is the audit liaison with the the Arizona Senate, was joined me this morning just after 9 o'clock. And we talked about this ballot audit that's going on. And I'm coming at a perspective here of trying to give everybody the benefit of the doubt that's doing this, because I know a lot of the people there. And I also understand that most people in Arizona don't. Most people in Arizona have no idea who Ken Bennett is, have no idea who Anthony Kern is, have no idea who Karen Fan is. They have no clue who those people are. And when you hear, and I think everyone has to keep this perspective, when people hear, they have my ballot, I voted and they have my ballot. Most people's inclination is get away from my ballot. If you are going to have an audit, you have to be extra sure that you are reassuring people that their ballots are handled with the utmost care, that their privacy will be protected, not just from the public, but from anybody in that room. It's none of anybody's business in that room how a specific person voted. And I'm not saying that they know that information. You have to reassure people. And going back, and I've kind of gone over chronologically some of the issues that happened at the very beginning of this. And they have to acknowledge that they started off on the wrong foot. when you have a news reporter that spends 4 days in a row inside the Coliseum with nobody asking him why he's there or what he's doing, and he's got a camera, and on day four, he's standing next to boxes of ballots and saying, these are the ballots. These are the computers that they're going to use. It doesn't give a very good picture. Now, did they fix that? I believe they have. They said they have. Day one of the audit, the guy, the people in charge, the experts, so to speak, cyber ninjas, who, again, nobody in Arizona has ever heard of. The cyber ninjas are coming in with their team of subcontractors, who we don't even know their names, are coming in. And on day one of the audit, are handing out blue and black pens, which everybody, well, I shouldn't say everybody, but it's inside baseball. But when you're near the ballots and accounting process, no one is allowed to have blue or black ink. It's red or it's green, because blue and black is what you have to use to fill your ballot out when you do a mail-in ballot or otherwise. It's blue or black ink. So they don't allow it near the ballots for obvious reasons. They were handed out day one to volunteers. Again, I'm not accusing anybody of trying to cheat or being intending to cheat. I'm not doing any of that. But what it lends itself to is mismanagement. You're telling us that cyber ninjas and the subcontractors are the best available people in the country to do this audit fairly, to do it honestly, and to do it transparently. We haven't seen any transparency. The cyber ninjas went to court to try to keep everything secret. The judge said no. So now they were forced to give out some information. The appearances here are not good. There's an election in a year and a half. How much time and how much money are we spending on this? Now, I agree with the principle that if the election was compromised, why would another election in a year and a half be any different? And don't we want the people of Arizona to know we're fixing any problems? To that, I say absolutely. Absolutely. But does anybody believe that looking for bamboo in the ballots right now is helping us? So I asked him about why are you looking for bamboo in the ballots?
Looking for bamboo, that's a euphemism for, you know, there are some people on the right that think that, you know, they've heard rumors that ballots were brought in from Asia. And if so, would there be bamboo in the paper? But they're just looking for things that can we're looking for things to dispel. We're trying to myth bust.
And I understand the premise of myth busting. I get it. But if you went after every rumor and every myth that was out there for everything, we'd lose our minds. He used the example of the Trump administration and the falsehoods that led to that investigation. So wouldn't this be another one of those falsehoods? And that I'm not trying to be accusatory, but when you look at this and you say someone made the accusation, someone somewhere, some guy somewhere, and that's not what Ken Bennett said. That's what the other guy said the other day. Some guy somewhere said something that led to us now using a process to look for bamboo in the paper. They believe that 40,000 votes could have been sent here from China. And if they were sent from China, they probably would have been printed on a different kind of paper. That's why they're doing some of this. And a lot of people are saying, not with my ballot. Are you crazy? Don't waste your time with that on my ballot. And you've got to be able to dispel people's fears. So he talks, this is a comment about that.
There's nothing wrong, in my opinion, for looking to make sure that there isn't bamboo in the paper or whatever.
Or whatever. But what other rumors are there? What else is out there? So do you think, and I said, do you think you're going to find any of that in the paper?
I don't expect that we're going to find any bamboo in the paper. But one of the people told Mr. Brakey that he thought that's why we were doing what we were doing. So Mr. Brakey reported that.
Who authorized it? That's, again, I'm coming to this conversation as somebody that wants to believe what the audit is telling me. Somebody that wants to believe that the audit was necessary for everybody to have peace of mind. I'm on your side from the beginning, and I've got these questions. Imagine what the people that don't know who you are and don't care who you are, what they think. We know the people that hate this, hated this from the beginning. But at some point, when you say a rumor about bamboo in the paper, it sounds outrageous. It sounds crazy. And when you do this, it takes away from people's confidence. And the last thing I'll say, this election that's coming up a year and a half, and I've talked about the six races that are happening statewide. The governor's race is up for grabs, the governor's office, because our governor is termed out. The governor's office is up for grabs. The attorney general, the secretary of state, who, by the way, the secretary of state's office is first in line if the governor can't do the job or leaves the job to become governor. That's who becomes the governor. That race is up for grabs. Superintendent of public schools, state treasurer, and Mark Kelly, the seat. He's got to run for a full term in that seat that he won 2 years ago. All of those races are coming up in the state of Arizona. All of them. And we're paying attention to something like bamboo and paper ballots. You don't think that this is going to be used against any Republican candidate that runs statewide or otherwise. It absolutely is going to. And I just wonder what's going to happen next, how this ends, what happens next. Why doesn't Joe Biden talk about the border? The president's comments through his press secretary coming up next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks so much for being here. It is the Mike Broomhead Show. Appreciate you being here. If you've not subscribed to the Mike Broomhead Show podcast yet, you can do it. It's very simple to do on any one of your devices, and you'll never miss a minute of the show again. It's the Mike Broomhead Show podcast, brought to you this week by Retirement Planners of America. Let's talk about the border for a moment. Here's a headline. ICE deportation slashed under Biden, fall to a record low amid immigration crisis. We have talked, or I've talked, at great lengths about the policies that are incentivizing people to come here. And there have been many of them in the policy shift. And we know this because as people are crossing the border, media members are asking them, why are you coming? And to a person, they're saying they believe that Biden has invited them. Now, is some of this cartel propaganda? Absolutely it is. But a lot of these people are not going back and saying, forget it, they're not letting you in. There is a huge number of people that are still coming into this country, especially unaccompanied minors. The other story locally about this is here in the Phoenix area, and it said Phoenix specifically in the story, but I imagine there's other valley cities, that migrants are being dropped off, unceremoniously dropped off at bus stops, Greyhound bus stops or stations all over the valley, and specifically in Phoenix, Arizona, where we live. And now it's happening in bigger cities because they're moving away from small towns because the small towns don't have the facilities to house people. Well, we don't necessarily either. There are a limited number of beds for people in need, whether it's homeless shelters or otherwise. The risk of COVID-19, this is part of the frustration for me. I want you to picture this. You and I are supposed to maintain, and I'm one of the people that's been fully vaccinated. I'm supposed to maintain my distance. I'm supposed to wear my mask for the good of everybody else. That's what I'm supposed to do. There are people that are coming into this country that are being jammed into federal facilities that are way over capacity. By the way, the CDC has given approval for them to be over capacity. We're not allowed to be over capacity, but the only federal building you can go into without distancing and sometimes without wearing a mask properly are these federal immigration facilities. Then they're putting them on buses. They're dropping them off at a Greyhound bus station to where they would then go, maybe conceptually, that they are going to go into a facility. Somebody's going to take them in to a homeless shelter or otherwise. Do you have any idea how hard charitable organizations have worked just in the city of Phoenix to stop the spread of COVID-19 among homeless people? Do you have you probably have no clue how hard they've worked. They have vans that were driving around and testing people. They were keeping people isolated. They had hotels that were rundown hotels or abandoned hotels, but they were still working in order. And they were renting rooms for homeless people that were COVID positive to keep them out of the homeless population. Downtown Phoenix near TASC, which is the big campus where homeless people get services all on one campus, homeless people have been camping there for years. They put up chains to keep people distant in the tents they were in. They are giving out masks as part of their kits that they give people for hygiene. The city of Phoenix donated thousands of masks to organizations like Circle the City and down at Task so that they could distribute them to homeless people, to keep homeless people distant, to keep homeless people out there. They're working on getting them vaccinated because it's a population that's always crowded together. And now you're going to bring in people on buses, drop them off at a Greyhound station, and then put them in the very places with homeless people until they can find another place to go. And what do you think is going to happen to the infection rate among that group of people? This is not anti-Brown. This is not anti-immigration. This is anti-irresponsibility. So now you are going to say, not only are we going to drop the, we're going to raise the limit of people we're going to take in as refugees to 62,500, from 15,000 to over 60,000. Number one. Number two, we're not turning a lot of people away. We're taking unaccompanied minors. You don't have to give your reasons or application for asylum on the other side of the border. You can do it and get a court date in one of these facilities. We're housing people in hotels. And now the incentive that we have dropped deportations to an all-time low. Explain to me how the policies of this administration are pro enforcement. They aren't pro-enforcement. And this is something that the president said he wanted to do before he took office. During one of the primary debates, he talked about creating a surge at the border. Now, no one has called him out on this since, and I don't understand why, because everyone is calling this a crisis, including both Democrat senators from Arizona. Both are saying this is wrong. There has got to be a way to fix our immigration system. I have no doubt about that. None. We should be able to invite good people at a more rapid pace to come into this country legally. We can do a better job at vetting. We have no idea who a lot of these people are, what their intentions are, or where they go once they're dropped off at a bus stop. Jen Psaki was talking about this, and she was talking about this on David Axelrod's podcast, and why Biden doesn't go to the border.
What we've tried to do in general and thinking about how we use his time is really think about what the public cares about, right? The public cares about the pandemic, the economy.
Yes.
We're often asked, why doesn't he go to the border? Important issue, we're focused on it. What percentage of the public is focused on the border? A much smaller percentage than who's focused on the pandemic and the economy.
I would love to hear from someone that is a Biden voter. And I admit, I didn't vote for Joe Biden. But if you voted for Joe Biden, if you are a Democrat or an independent person that voted for Joe Biden, is there anything about that statement or the policies right now in immigration that believe that they are taking this seriously? She says, serious issue, and we're on it. The vice president of the United States was assigned the job to solve this problem about 45 days ago, and she hasn't said a word to the press about it since then, except when asked and said sometime in June she's planning a trip to Guatemala. Their plan includes giving hundreds of millions of dollars to these Central American countries, believing that people won't come here if we send money there. That's part of the problem that we're seeing. I would love to help and see a thriving Mexico and a thriving Central America. I think if we were able to do that, that would be terrific. But the problems in those countries are so deep and so wide, people are fleeing. That doesn't mean poverty is a reason for asylum. But we could do a better job in immigration. But that is not the point here. The point here is illegal immigration, not legal immigration. We're talking about stopping the flow of people coming here illegally. They admit that 90% of the claims for asylum are deemed to be fraudulent claims, but it's taken too long to find that out. So the two bad things that are, we have people coming here for illegitimate reasons that are among us. And the other one is the people that are coming here for legitimate reasons are waiting an extended period of time to have their cases heard because of the influx of all of these people. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. In a moment, another piece of audio from Jen Psaki and the White House. Do they want the president freelancing and taking questions during press conferences? How she answered that question to David Axelrod, we'll let you hear it in just a moment.
Strong. strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks again for being here. Happy Friday from the Mike Broomhead Show. Let's continue to talk about the White House and how things are playing out. President Trump had a way of overstating things. It's a reason why he's suspended on social media. I guess that's pretty much an understatement, right, Steve? He overstated things. Is that an understatement? Would you call
that? I think that's the polite way to say it.
Okay, thank you. I thank you. But he was known to not back down from an argument with anyone, media or otherwise, and would fights on Twitter all the time, constantly. The Biden administration is the least covered administration, I think, in history. And I don't understand why they're not asking questions or calling them out. The president had gone an extended period of time without a press conference and then didn't want to answer questions or wouldn't. There was one, we played some audio. He was doing a virtual press conference or a virtual roundtable, I would guess, with Democrat leaders in the Congress. And at the end of his speaking, he said, hey, listen, I don't know if I'm supposed to do this, but if you guys want to ask some questions, I'll take some questions. And they cut his feed off. So not his feet, his feed off. I'll make sure I'm clear that they did not cut his feet off. But Jen Psaki was talking about why doesn't the president talk? Are you recommending that he don't take questions? And I can't believe the honesty from Jen Psaki to David Axelrod.
He takes questions nearly every day he's out from the press. That is not something we recommend. In fact, a lot of times we say don't take questions, you know, but he's going to do what he wants to do because he's the president of the United States.
Why are they discouraging the president of the United States from taking questions from people? This is part of the concern is the age of the president and how he gets confused at times. We played a little bit the other day when he was talking about the vaccine and what website you could go to. Sometimes it's funny. Sometimes I don't think it's very funny at all. And what I mean by that is it's the president of the United States. It's the guy running the show. So are they doing this as a service to the rest of the world because we don't want the rest of the world doubting the ability of the president of the United States? Are they now protecting the presidency? Because they certainly didn't do this during the last administration. And so when people talk about unfairness, this is part of what they talk about. If the goofs were made by the previous administration that are being made right now, it would be headline after headline after headline. There'd be a medley of those playing every single day in cable news and otherwise. And there would be questions. There were questions about our former president's ability to do the job. MSNBC made a career of it for a few weeks of bringing on mental health experts to say that the president of the United States was incompetent. I've never examined him, which goes against every bit of ethics in the medical field. I've not examined this particular patient, but I can tell you that they've got mental health issues, which of course was being used as propaganda all over the world. They were genuinely questioning his mental ability to do the job. They're not even asking relative questions right now about anything, which is why a lot of people don't trust what's going on, especially when it comes to media. And I've said this, and I hope I say it. I should probably say it more. I never expect anyone to take what I say on the air at face value as gospel truth. I try to post or talk about or give references to everything I say because I want to make sure that you know that I'm coming at some place, whether you agree with my idea or you agree with my point of view or not. I'm giving you facts about what's happening, and I am responding to the facts. And I'm sure I'm not 100% on it, but I try to do that as much as I can. And I always want people to do their homework. I always want people to fact check. You should never blindly listen to anyone. And in this case, there are real questions. When the press secretary to the White House tells David Axelrod, we recommend that the president doesn't take questions. Why aren't you asking why? Why don't you want him taking questions? What are the reasons? It doesn't make any sense. Well, unless, of course, they're trying to keep something from everyone. You know, the president hasn't been to the border. The president didn't do a press conference for an extended period of time. He did give an address to Congress, but it was a watered down version with 200 people in the crowd. There is no give and take. There's a big difference between a speech, a statement, and a press conference. and giving the media an opportunity to ask questions and inquire and dig deeper on some of the things you say or some of the policies you have is kind of the cornerstone of what the White House press pool is supposed to be about. And we just aren't seeing a whole lot of that. And it's concerning. It should be a lot of concerning to a lot of people. The 11 o'clock hour, you know, we're going to do Did You Hear This? We always do that at 11:20. And if you're new to the show, if you're new to listening to us, I really do appreciate you checking us out. But if you're missing some of the headlines throughout the morning while you're at work, we have one segment of the show at 11:20 where Steve, the producer, puts it all together in one segment so you get caught up on the headlines. We call it Did You Hear This? We do that at 11:20, so I hope you'll be here for it. But we're going to talk just after 11 o'clock about policing and police situations. There's an organization called We Rising. Now, We Rising wants to defund the police, but also create an unarmed force to deal with certain situations in town. And I talked with their lead organizer here in town. It was an interesting conversation. And I want you to be able to hear some of what he had to say and my response to some of what he had to say, because I'm someone that thinks we need more police, not less. So that's coming up here in the final hour of the show. I hope you'll stick around for it.